So I'm sitting with chef, winemaker, restaurateur, Emmy Award winner, Michael Chiarella at his beautiful restaurant, Bottega. And I have a few questions for you. You trained at the CIA and then went on to Florida International University School of Hospitality, worked in Miami, and then was named Chef of the Year by Food & Wine magazine. Now, before all of that, you really grew up around a family with a lot of food. How did that influence your choice to become a chef and kind of mold you?
I think like any kid that watches their family in a family business, if they have a family business, you get a chance to see what the joy and the pain in something that somebody does as a craft. So I come from a family of craftsmen, and food is always the center of the table. So it was a simple choice for me.
How did that influence just your whole thinking about food, being around it so much and being around a family that was so involved in producing food and making food?
Well, I think the things that we do at Bottega today are always influenced. You know, we were an ingredient-based family, so we concentrated on either gathering, growing, raising, harvesting our own. So we were farm to table before it had a title.
And then after working on the East Coast for a while, you came back to California, specifically to Napa, and worked at founding chef for Trevina, right? Why did you choose to return to California from the East Coast?
I think the Napa in 1987 was a very different place when there were a couple of restaurants. So there was a couple, two or three decent restaurants in the valley, not like it is today, where it's kind of a culinary mecca. And it was a chance to use any technique that you might use in the city and still live in the country. And it's easy to say, but it's usually unheard of. If you go out in the middle of Iowa somewhere, you might not find your community as well traveled as you would in the middle of the Napa Valley. So the locals and the visitors had great palates to start with, and there was a kind of a pent up demand.
And the product is here.
All the products are here. The customers are here, and the appreciation for that
for the food is here as well. Now you have had several TV series on PBS as well as the Food Network, where you receive Emmys.
Pop that off 1 second.
Okay, so you started off on PBS and then on the Food Network, 3 Emmys.
Yes.
Quite impressive. And how did you enter into television after being a chef in a restaurant?
Well, in 87 when I opened Trevina, and any restaurants that I would have owned all through the 80s and 90s, there wasn't, the food media wasn't as sophisticated as it is today. So if you want somebody to know about what you did, you would do classes, you would hold demonstrations, you would do charity events in places where you can get in front of a group of people, and you had a short amount of time to really express what your passions were in hopes that you would strike a chord with them, and when they came to the Napa Valley, they'd come to your restaurant. So I think my generation, I'm probably the youngest of that generation of chefs, or one of the younger ones, that we took care of each other, and there were a couple dozen chefs from around the country, and you would go from city to city to do various benefits and promote each other's restaurants.
And then did someone see you and then ask you to have a show on PBS?
Yeah, I did.
Just do like a bunch of interviews.
I did a handful of.
He's pretty good.
I did a handful of specials for Fox. I did a couple of appearances on a couple of other people's shows. And the folks at KQED and Jeff Drummond, who was Julia Child's producer for the last decade, bumped into me doing something and approached me to do a show or talked to me about whether I had any interest in it, and that's where it started.
And then when you came on the Food Network, I really exploded.
Well, yeah, they're very different. You know, you have 30 uninterrupted minutes of cooking. Probably some of my favorite shows I've ever done were on PBS, because you were more unscripted. It wasn't an advertiser-driven medium, so you didn't you had an opportunity to be 100% yourself. You know, at food you have a much broader audience, we were national. We actually had a bigger audience than PBS, but there's more promotion that happens on Food Network. And then it blows up. But for me, you know, it was about, it really wasn't about me being on TV. It was about, you know, my restaurants were always a bridge between where people were and where they wanted to be with Italian food.
Okay.
And this is just a chance in the, you know, especially post 9/11, when people were really gathering at home and cooking more,
right.
And kind of hiving with their group of friends. You had an unbelievable audience, especially then, the core audience, the early adopters, because they were very well traveled. They traveled all over the world. They've eaten in the best restaurants, all the big expense accounts, all through the .com era.
Right.
But they spent absolutely no time cooking.
And they probably didn't know how to cook.
They didn't know how to cook. I mean, one of the things that we gave up in the 60s were our heritage. There's a lot we got, but one of the things we gave up is our family heritage, because it really was a very strong cut. And that was your core audience then. If you were, you know, 17, 18 in the 60s, then you would have been kind of 45,
right.
50, which would have been one of your core restaurant and television audiences. So you had people that really understood what great food was and had no idea what their own family heritage was, and were looking to create some traditions of their own, some new traditions for themselves. And so I just moved that bridge from the restaurants.
And you fit in
to the home.
Really well, because it was so easy. You know, your recipes are very easy to get the product, easy to cook, not too time consuming, you know, not a million ingredients.
But that was really the feature of Easy Entertaining. I mean, it's not what we do here at Bottega.
Right.
It looks easy on the plate, but this is the stuff you don't want to cook at home. Stuff I don't want to cook at home. Without a crew of 10 and a cleanup crew of 4. But it really was. It was, you know, we were very careful with it. We were looking to share some of the techniques that you might use from my 20 years in the kitchen. You know, if you're a professional chef and you had these simple ingredients and these techniques in your repertoire, what might you come up with?
Right, that you could actually cook for your
right.
family.
And what could you do in advance? What could you do the day before? What are some of the tricks of the trade?
Right. Now, why did you decide to open Bottega? I mean, at a time when it kind of was economically, I know that Yountville's doing fairly well as it looks, but it was kind of a iffy economic time.
Oh, yeah, it was the lowest point of the Dow in that
yeah.
year.
But I'm sure you'd plan to open it before then, your plans were.
Well, yeah, I could have pushed it off. There's a lot of things I could have done. You know, I think the price point of where we're at, how we chose to write and deliver our wine list from a margin standpoint.
Because you have a really unique wine program here too.
Wine program and the markups are more like retail than they are at restaurants. So 3.5 and 4, they're 2 times, and that would really embrace the community. So I know I'd get great vintner support from that, because it's at a time when wine consumption's up, but what they're paying a bottle is down. And restaurant businesses down across the country. So if
right.
they get good vintner support and hoping to support this program and other restaurateurs come and see, they might be able to do the same thing.
Kind of also giving back to the community as well.
Exactly.
You know, helping out the local community.
So unlike, this isn't a 7-course spot. You can make it one. But you can come and split a gnocchi and have a Cortina
and
wine.
A bottle of wine, split
right.
it. Right.
right.
For relatively good value.
Yeah, for great value. So. And I knew that from a hospitality standpoint, if I was here and we could throw the party, we can create something. You know, the value proposition here is kind of dinner and a movie. You know, especially in the evenings when there's so many different scenes going on, everybody's kind of having a, you know, each room ends up being its own party. This ends up being a party.
Yeah,
there's one
it
over
is.
There,
it's really
one over
beautifully
there, one over there,
the architecture.
One over here,
yeah.
Two over here.
You can sit outside, you know, enjoy your wine. You can come in here. You can have an intimate, romantic
right.
dinner. You can have a long, big dinner
so
with
the opportunities
family.
Are great, so you never feel like you're in a dining hall.
Right. It's very comfortable in
Thank
here.
You.
Really comfortable. And can you talk a little bit about the name? Because it means workshop, right?
Workshop studio, where somebody goes to perfect their craft to work on. So I wasn't been cooking. Far from it. You know, 10 years ago, that would have put me kind of 37, 38 when I sold all my restaurants then. And I was maybe on the 40-yard line, so I had some room to go.
And you want to get back in the kitchen.
Yeah, I mean, this is you do television, it's all fine. Everybody thinks that's the end all. It really isn't. You know, that was something to do. It's like writing a book. It's something you do to express your craft. But at some point, you have to reinvest back in it. You know, you give everything that you've learned out in over 300 shows. And,
That's a lot. That's a lot to do.
Five, six books. And you don't have anything new to say. You have to kind of just shut up and go get some new stuff to say.
Well, also, you don't appear to be a person that would just stay somewhere for a very long time. I mean, you have a winery, you've done restaurants, you've done television. You know, it seems like you always want a challenge to keep doing
something. I really miss it. You know, I tend to go backwards rather than forwards. So my food goes backwards, my thoughts do. So I wanted to, for as long as I can, be a guy with one restaurant. When you don't hear that from chefs anymore, they usually have 3, 4,
right.
5, 6, 7, 8 restaurants. I was there already. And the only benefit to that versus, there's only two benefits to that. One is money, which is neither here nor there for your craft. And the other is an opportunity for your team to grow. So it was a great inflection point for me. Either I was going to invest in my current team that I had then, turn 10 restaurants into 20.
Right.
And let them grow, and I didn't have any interest in doing that. And they were ready to kind of blossom out on their own. So it's nice to have one. You never see anybody in the restaurants anymore.
No, you don't. I covered a lot of celebrity chef restaurants, and I have only seen that in Fleur de Lay.
Right. Yeah.
It's the only one.
Old school, yeah.
Yeah, in San Francisco, and
yeah.
He's there a lot.
He's there a lot.
Which is
yeah.
great. Now, this restaurant sits on a historical site. Is that right? Was it once a cooking school?
There's two things. It was the oldest winery in the Napa Valley. That's where the walls here are from. It's called the Grosinger Winery. And hey, Will.
Yes.
Let's have the guys finish up and make sure we get all these flies before service, if you don't mind.
Yes, sir.
But the Schmidts, the original owners of the French Laundry before Thomas bought it, had a restaurant in the corner over here called the Chutney Kitchen. And it was a breakfast and lunch place, and they made chutney. But it was a local gathering place in the afternoons, you know, for a glass of wine, for a beer, and a little snack that if you had an issue, or if you had a farming concern, or you had a fermentation concern that you would like, this is before cell phones.
You could just meet here?
You would meet here, and whoever was here would be able to help you out.
That's great that you built on that site.
Yeah,
it's a real sense of history.
And the old guard, they were the new guard then. Let me see that, Will. Harvest in the Napa Valley.
And what was your big challenge in opening Bottega?
Well, to take one is that we had to respect. Every other week they do this Napa Valley cooking school here. So all of the, even the young vintners that are my age now were kids. We're in and around this spot, so I had to really respect that and respect what the Napa Valley was all about. The challenge, is to gather back up the team that kind of dispersed in a bunch of different places, and a lot of them have come back, so it's really nice, both front of the house and in back of the house, to find that. It's always a challenge in the restaurant business when your job is to cook dinner for everybody else,
mm-hmm.
to be at your own dinner table with your own family, is to find that balance at the same time. But I think...
And can you do that? Do you have time now to spend?
Oh, no, not yet. Not yet.
Because you have a young child now
I'm
right?
Yeah, 3.5-year-old boy.
Yeah.
But like he comes over, you know, on Fridays, he comes for an early supper.
So you do get... I mean, so you can have that
get
family
three,
time?
I probably get three. And I think the challenge is just continuing to try to raise the bar of service and food of what you're doing yourself and finding people that want to run the hurdles every day.
And do it.
I think America's gotten, the culinary world, the restaurant world, has gotten a little bit static. Where I don't think it's, you know, the growth that happened from 1990 to 2000 was at a much higher rate than from 2000 to 2009. And I think one of the opportunities when you're coming out of a softer economy is you have to stick to your knitting. You have to really make sure there's good value on the plate, that's a good value on the glass, that the value proposition and service and hospitality is there as well, that you're adding all the hidden value things that people come to restaurants.
Which you really didn't have to do, being kind of a celebrity chef. People would have come anyway.
They would have come once. They would have, and so frequency is one of those things you really like. You know, if this is, if restaurants are now partially people's dining room table at home, you want frequency to be something that's really
right.
Cool,
so this isn't so much I will go for like French Laundry, birthday, or an anniversary because you can only afford to go at that.
We get plenty of anniversaries and plenty of birthdays, and then and then people come back and say, "Wow, that was it was affordable. It was a great party. We had a lot of fun.
So
everybody was
that.
Having a good time, and we'll come back and we'll tell
great.
Our friends and we'll tell our friends about it." You have to go through the mushroom cloud period with the restaurant. We have to let it,
you know,
the explosion blow up. And the first year is when the mushroom really begins to happen, when the customers come back in and they rotate back and they bring with them. Every great customer experience will bring 10 people in the next
right.
couple of years.
And
them.
That just keeps going.
And that will kind of perpetuate
going.
What you do.
And then what surprised you about coming back in the kitchen in the last few years when you saw like all of getting to know younger chefs, people coming up? Did it change that drastically? Were they interested in learning other things? And did they have to learn other things like marketing and things they maybe didn't have to know when you were coming up as a chef?
Well, they're more interested in marketing than they are in cooking. And it's actually backwards. You have to have something to market.
Right.
People ask me all the time, it's the number one question a young cook. Hey, how do I get my own show? I'm like, stop it. Forget about the show thing, and forget about Top Chef, and forget about all this other stuff, and forget about the attitude that you see on TV. And you got to understand that people are casting a show,
right?
So they're casting characters. So don't pay attention to the character inside you, or your own personal characters. This business is what this business is. It has been for 200 years. It will be for another 200 years. Where discipline and dedication.
And it's a craft. Now, you present really farm-to-table food, but your dedication to sustainability goes back much further. I mean, you really have this strong sense of being very ecologically friendly and aware. Like, I think in Napa style, I saw that you reused, barrels to do stools, and... that's really important to you as well, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a, it's not a fad, it's not a trend, it's a way of life. We grew up throwing little away. So by being thrifty or being sustainable at the same time, being able to repurpose something rather than to recycle, it's even better. And that's been kind of a mainstay. I mean, I farm organically. I understand what the challenges are for farmers I'm buying from. And it's just trying to keep as soft a footprint as you can.
Uh-huh. Okay, great. And then just another question. The final challenge on Top Chef, and I'm not going to ask you a lot about Top Chef, but the final challenge on Top Chef was to cook the meal of your life, which was like a four-course autobiography, kind of in a sense, telling the story of your life and who you are. And watching that was a particularly perfect challenge, I think, for you, because you're really a storyteller and you like to tell stories with your food. Can you talk a little bit about that experience and how you just integrate that anyway? It's always a story going into what a dish is.
We spend a lot of time working on flavor, and there's a big difference between taste and flavor, and the story and the history and how it's presented are part of that flavor. And in a time where we spend so much time on taste, just how does it taste in our mouth, not how does it feel in our mind, how does it feel in our heart, what are the rest of the pieces that kind of go with it, and how can your creativity help tell that story?
And that's always been kind of a part of your cooking philosophy, hasn't it? That it's always kind of bringing something from your history, bringing something that's really important.
Yeah, it's really kind of going backwards and letting those culinary memories be part of the, be part of the table. It really wasn't a meal that anybody had the right to judge. Because it's not a,
it's very personal.
It's not scorable.
Right, yeah.
I mean, it's really not scorable. Yeah, don't move. Thank you.
And And each, it wasn't like you were all cooking the same thing and judged, you know, on how you cooked that dish. It was really what was important to you.
No, it's very different. I mean, Hubert and I have Rick has a discovered passion for Mexico. Hubert and I, for our cultures, have one that we grew up in.
Right.
But they're all equally as good. But it was interesting to see the separation, to hear, you know, I was very, very fond of the first course that Hubert did, and hearing how the women on laundry day
were. Right. I thought that was really interesting,
too. I could see the women, the little French women in Alsace with the support hose, bringing their little thing to the baker, you know, on laundry day with a basket.
Yeah, that was a great story.
You know, I could see all of that. It wasn't where intellectually I could taste Rick's food, because it's more, what's the word, anthropological.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
It really was an anthropology discovery, a cultural discovery. But for
the two of you, it really kind of was the sense of memory and the sense of, and when you stood up there and were telling those stories, you could really kind of see the connection between the food, mm-hmm. because it really was so personal. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of why I thought, wow, you know, that was kind of an interesting challenge what they threw at them, but it was really nice to see what everyone came up with. But also, I agree, kind of a hard thing to judge.
Yeah, it's not judgeable.
Yeah.
I mean, the mole that Rick made was just extraordinary. I mean, you taste something that somebody's been working on for that many years to perfect, and you can taste it both in my friendship for him, my appreciation for his intellect, for dishes like that. You know, it was unbelievable. I think they needed, in reality TV, if you don't have new contestants that are inspired to come back, your show's over.
That's right.
You know, so I think they needed a warm fuzzy at the end for any other chefs, especially after they threw me under the bus the show before.
Yeah, that's right.
I had plenty of calls from my chefs saying, what? Just for that?
Yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting, the way that they showed what they showed on that show. It showed, with the picks that they made in editing,
yeah.
I thought it was really interesting. Okay. And have you been following the new Top Chef series at all?
You know, I don't. This is my kind of thing here. I mean, I'll let three of them go. Maybe I'll pick them off Amazon and I watch them when I can.
And watch them.
But on our TV, they air at like 7 o'clock.
Oh, okay.
And 7 o'clock, I'm here.
Yeah, that's right.
So I have to download.
And then what's next for you, Chef?
No, there's no next.
You're just enjoying it now.
Yeah, I'm cooking my restaurant. And
you seem pretty happy here. I mean,
I'm
you
really
seem
happy
really comfortable.
Having, yeah, this is a, as long as you're cooking, then you're getting plenty, as long as your food's above. I mean, I'm doing a book.
And when will that come out?
Fall next year. So, you know, we started testing recipes 2 weeks ago. And we'll work on that for the next 2 months. And writing is one of those things that you kind of do just to document the history of your food, the evolution of your food. So you really can't wait too long, because otherwise you're going to miss all of those dishes.
Right.
2 years from now, there are dishes that I wouldn't put in the book that we're cooking now, that we evolved in a different direction of. So you want to kind of give those moment in time treats.
Wonderful. Well, I'm really excited to taste your food.
Thank you.
And thank you so much.
Thank you.